Support for 30 Days of West Virginia Music is provided by Kinship Goods, proud supporter of DIY music and the arts. Locally shipped worldwide at kinshipgoods.com. Seriously, have you checked them out? It's really cool t-shirts.
I think if you're trying to promote your music, you kind of have to leave wherever you are. And West Virginia would be no different. But it, just like any place that's not metropolitan or, you know, doesn't have a lot of tourist activity, that it's just hard to sustain original music scenes, the economy of the keeping a venue open, employing people, bands, keeping them interested, you know. It's the same thing we talk about lots of other places outside of West Virginia, just like how to keep these little scenes going.
I'm Joni Deutsch, and this is 30 Days of West Virginia Music, a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting and A Change of Tune. Throughout the month of June, we are celebrating some of the folks who are making the West Virginia music scene wild and wonderful. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews. And today, a musician and independent label head who is helping other indie artists make waves. This is Mr. Husband. Can you introduce yourself and what do you do?
Sure. My name is Kenny Tompkins. I am a West Virginia native. I grew up in Petersburg, West Virginia in the Eastern Panhandle. I'm a musician known by a couple different names, Kenny Husband, or that's Mr. Husband to you. I also, with two other West Virginia boys, co-run a record label called Yellow K Records that's gotten some international attention for our releases. So I'm just a West Virginia guy who is pretty active in the music industry in a lot of different ways.
So Kenny, it's been almost 3 years since we last chatted, and yet you were my first West Virginia music interview for A Change of Tune. And it really does feel good getting you back on the phone for this particular 30 Days of West Virginia Music series.
Feels good being back.
Yeah, it's good to be back on the radio. But the time that we talked, you were working with New God. But some people might not have heard that interview. So for those that aren't familiar with you or your backstory, can you talk a little bit about how and where you were raised in Petersburg, West Virginia?
Sure. Yeah. So I was raised in Petersburg, which, like I said, is in the Eastern Panhandle. It's a beautiful little place. I had a good time living there. I grew up right across from the North Fork of the Potomac River. Could smell and hear the river the whole time I was growing up. And I've always made music with my brother, Kurt, and we started a band called New God in Frostburg, Maryland, when we were living there. And that band got some attention for our first two records, which were called Motorcar and Firework. We toured the whole country, and a lot of people compared us to the Beach Boys. The vocal harmonies that we sing are usually a part that people talk about when they talk about our band, New God. So it's kind of a bright, shiny, happy thing, not very influenced by Appalachian music, kind of our own take on, pop music mixed with a little bit of surf music, but sung by two brothers from Petersburg, West Virginia.
And I know that at the time you were making New God music with your brother, you weren't in West Virginia.
That's true.
But were there any influences in New God's music that came from your upbringing?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I think all of my music would have to be influenced by my upbringing in the way that where I grew up, there really wasn't anyone that I knew making original music and trying to project it or promote it. And so I sort of felt very alone with being a creative person, which isn't a bad thing. In fact, it actually gave me a really extreme ego when I was a kid. I thought all my songs were fantastic. And then I went to college and met some other people who were also trying to write songs. And I thought to myself, well, I better try a little harder. These guys are doing pretty good. And so I would say, yeah, the solitude of, the culture. I didn't grow up around a lot of like punk rock bands or people setting an example of what a band or an artist should be. So I think I just kind of grew a little more like a wildflower in that way. And that feels like something that is a theme in my music, but for better or worse, I can't seem to do anything other than exactly what I feel compelled to do any given day. Can't seem to make a certain type of music just because I want to make that kind of type of music. So I hope that kind of answers it. I would say that the freedom and distance from other music scenes in West Virginia made me just a unique character.
Yeah, and I've I've talked with a number of musicians, and you know, they come from all around the state. Some of them were influenced by Morgantown's punk rock scene to, you know, the southern coalfields with the more Appalachian kind of music. But I have to say that I, of the people I've interviewed, they've not mentioned the more popular side of music and if that had a role in West Virginia. So you're right, in that case, you kind of did have to create it for yourself because there really wasn't anything in Petersburg, let alone anywhere in the Mountain State that could inspire you in that way.
It's true, yeah. And I know some people who make pop music from West Virginia now that I've been around long enough to get to meet lots and lots of lovely souls in the music scene. But at the time, I just felt alone with that. And my parents, you know, turned me onto pop music. So the Beatles were what we listened to at our house. And that just is what the type of music that always made sense to me. Really, really strong melodies. But I mean, I like rock music like anybody, like, you know, loud crash cymbals.
Did you guys get to play much in West Virginia? Or have you played much in West Virginia touring around?
Yeah, well, our early days, we played almost, I didn't think we could play outside of West Virginia for some reason. You know, it was like a revelation to decide to go play outside the state. So 123 Pleasant Street in Morgantown might as well have been like Shea Stadium or something like that to us, because we were always trying to book that place because that's where the best bands who came through West Virginia would play.
That's true.
So that was a big goal for a long time when I was a kid. And once I got to play there, you know, then I was like, well, I guess I'm done. I'm done as a musician now. I played at 123 Pleasant Street. And then I thought, oh, there are other places like that in the country I should also go to. But yeah, so we played in Morgantown a ton. I've probably played every little dive in Morgantown at least at one point. Fairmont as well. There was a place called Sharky's that had like a stripper pole and a cage right in front of the stage. We used to play all the time. And they would play porn in the background. And I was making like really tender, like Smashing Pumpkins music at the time. So it's a really weird juxtaposition.
How old were you? Were you in your teens or late 20s?
Yeah, I was in my, I was probably 20 at that time, and my brother, I was sneaking my brother and my, the guy that runs a label with me, Josh, we all were in a band together called Luminous, and they were 17, so we'd like either sneak them into the bar or like talk to the guy beforehand and be like, they're only 17, but they won't drink, and so they were in those weird situations when they were in high school. So, yeah, and we played a lot of weird places around West Virginia. I went to Logan County to play at a place called The Rock. Shout out to The Rock. That was a kind of like faux Christian venue or something, and they let our weird band play there, so that's one. Yeah, but like, you know, the scene in West Virginia was always a little spread out as far as I could tell. We had to go all the way across the state. There was nowhere in the middle that we played. So
in Petersburg, there just wasn't anywhere for you to play there?
No, actually, the first show that my first band ever did, I had to rent a fire hall, like the party hall that was attached to the fire department, that for $300, and then I had to buy my own PA. We built a stage, and like, I just had no idea about these situations where you could go somewhere where they had a system and a sound guy and all this stuff. And so we, when you said do it yourself, you know, like the first show I ever did, I literally had to take on like every aspect of it, and I was only 19. And amazingly, we put all this work and effort into setting up that show, and then my brother, who was drumming, got appendicitis like 2 days beforehand and was just jacked up in the hospital. So we put all this effort into making this big production in the fire hall in Petersburg, and then me and the bass player Josh had to just play it by ourselves, which was a pretty big letdown, if I'm being honest, because we did not rock. We were pretty soft.
How many people showed up for that?
In my head, it was like everyone in town, but it was probably more like 40 or 50 people tops, you know. But it was for the first thing we ever did. We were satisfied with the number of people there for sure, you know.
Oh, that's such a good origin story, though. I mean, mm-hmm.
I'll send you a picture when I send the pictures tonight of me and the bass player. He's wearing a shirt that says "Rage Against the Appendix" because we thought that was so clever. Because the appendix had taken us down for that show. So I'll try to find that and send it to you.
Oh, that's great. I don't know why you didn't change your name to that. That's such a great name for a band.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, if I were in your shoes, I don't know if I'd feel discouraged about making and playing music in West Virginia, but I would probably feel like I should go elsewhere for doing anything musically.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, in the time and place we live in, I think if you're trying to promote your music, you kind of have to leave wherever you are. And West Virginia would be no different. But it, just like any place that's not metropolitan or, you know, doesn't have a lot of tourist activity, it's just hard to sustain original music scenes, the economy of the keeping a venue open, employing people, bands, keeping them interested, you know. It's the same thing we talk about lots of other places outside of West Virginia, just like how to keep these little scenes going with so little money getting injected into the scenes. It does take money to have a DIY scene, you know. But West Virginia had its own unique challenges too, because culturally I feel like I was scared to be an artist as a kid because I just didn't have a lot of examples set for that around me. Other men, other women, adults doing things and making it feel like an okay thing to do. So I felt a little like stepping out into a vulnerable place when I started playing music for other people, maybe a little more so than a kid from a town where there's like lots of bands at their high school. But, you know, I'm not complaining. I'm happy with how things turned out. So.
So the last time we spoke, which was in 2014, you had just released a new record with your brother, Kurt, under the moniker New God.
Yes.
So again, that was, you know, almost 3 years ago. What happened after that?
Well, you had just, I think at the time we talked, I had just gotten back from a really big national tour in support of that. And then Kurt and I hit the road at least two or three more times, kind of to a lesser extent, but just kept going back to the same cities we had toured on for that year. Ran the cycle of that record, and then both of us decided to take a break from that music and from that band and just sort of gather other parts of our lives up. And we had founded the label on the record that you're talking about. So that the record that you talked to me about in 2014, that's called Firework, that was the first record our record label, Yellow K, ever released. And after that, we got kind of a flurry of activity that also kind of pulled us away from our own music and got us focusing on helping promote other bands for a little bit. And then, you know, I just kind of write songs as I go, and then we try to figure out what project they belong to. And I just kept writing these songs that did not belong to New God for some reason. They just didn't feel like that. So we started shaping up an idea called Mr. Husband like a long time ago, just to kind of keep these tracks organized, and it really snowballed and took off this year. But decided to do it with some other musicians because Kurt was focused on some other art projects and things he was doing, and New God is like a potentially a thing we'll return to at some point, but for now I'm just like kind of going with what's coming natural, and this is the music and the band that's like just coming natural to me, you know.
So you do have that new debut release, Plaid on Plaid, which is under Mr. Husband.
That's right.
So technically this is a solo project. It is all you for this, not your brother.
Yeah, he wasn't involved in the creative process quite as much. More like I would show up with things that were done and just say like, is this, what do you think, is this good or bad? But not really him laying his hands on the product and changing it and really getting in there and tinkering with it. He's as glued to the process as any other thing I've done. I always play Kurt the music and get his opinion on it at least, you know.
Why Mr. Husband? Where does that come from?
Well, you got to admit it's a hell of a name. It looks good on a shirt. I've been a musician for a long time, and I'm old enough to feel like a little bit of what you might call an identity crisis about that. And I'm a married person. I am, you know, interested in aspects of life that aren't super punk rock anymore. Like, you know, I enjoy gardening and I do a lot of carpentry, and I definitely could probably help you fix your car to some extent. And, that kind of stuff, you know, that just doesn't really fit into the classic archetypes of what a person who plays music for a living is. They used to bother me a lot, and now I just wanted a sort of way to embrace myself as whatever I am. And something about the words Mr. Husband sort of embodied that acceptance of myself. You know, it's kind of a little joke, a little self-deprecating, but also like just honestly who I am, you know. But the way that it came about was like, my wife, Lindsay, who's a real sweetheart, said something to me about like, hey, husband. And I was like, that's Mr. Husband to you. It was just like a real stupid joke that we laughed at way too long. And then it got stuck to the band. So,
yeah. And it reminds me of like some idyllic caricature of the husband in like a 50s or 40s sitcom, like, and starring Mr. Husband.
Right. That's my, you got it. That's so true. Like, that's my whole idea for the band. I want like our album promos to be more like TV promos, like previously on Mr. Husband. And then like you learn about what's been going on with the band, that sort of thing, you know?
There's going to be like this whole mythology around Mr. Husband. It's going to be great for marketing.
Yep.
I love it.
That's my hope. Yeah.
So the new release does have similar threads to the kind of music that, you know, we've heard previously with your other projects, especially New God. Was that a conscious decision? Do you think that that's just something that kind of sunshiny indie rock pop, that that's just who, what you are and what you're going to be doing moving forward?
That's a good question. It is not the only thing that comes out of me, but it's definitely what I'm happiest to share with other people. I make a lot of music and art impulsively, and a lot of times it's not sunny and shiny. And that's not to say that it's not good, but I tend to look for the things that I think are going to appeal to people, but also serve a role in their life if they engage with it, you know? And so when I pick through the songs that I've written or recorded and put them together, a lot of times I really am just sort of shooting at a certain target of hoping that the record makes you feel good or understood or something like that. And I guess the one part that's really similar in everything I do is I always sing big harmonies. You know, I layer my voice over and over again, singing different pitches, and it creates a sort of broader vocal sound than people use today. It's not, and I produce it sort of like old school, like the way that the Beach Boys would, and we get a lot of people that say that. But it kind of comes down to that, I think, is probably what you're honing in on, the vocal harmonies and the way that I produce them.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right. It does have this kind of shimmering positivity about it. And then the release is great. Plaid on Plaid sounds great. It sounds just as good as what I've heard before. I mean, you have a consistency about you that makes it like, oh, yeah, even though this is a totally different project, I can still listen, appreciate. I know that quality is going to be here.
Well, thank you so much.
And this record is on your own label. Was Yellow K Records started as a way for you to make sure that your projects were pushed through and without the hassle of having to go through, you know, the major labels? I would say, you need to do this, you need to do that in order for us to take you on.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to answer that. Definitely part of it is just over time, having done so much for yourself as a musician, you start to say like, well, I guess I don't need anybody else involved as long as we can keep up with the organization of it all. You know, and we still want to get people involved in our music that are outside of Yellow K Records and, you know, other professionals. There's like tons of doors we can't open for ourselves that we need other people to help us with. But it does have something to do with my music, but it also has to just do with a shared love of music between me, my brother, and Josh Grapes, who is our kind of adopted brother. And just a lifelong thing that we've all had, sharing music and being really passionate about all aspects of it, making it, promoting it, and that type of thing. So,
well, I've seen that over the years, you know, the record labels brought on different acts that are great. I mean, like Eskimos, Japanese Breakfast. Did these bands reach out to you all, or was that something that you had connections with them to begin with and it just worked out naturally?
Both of those would be really different scenarios. Yeah, so Eskimo was playing keyboards in a band called Frankie Cosmos. Do you know that?
Yeah, yeah. The daughter of, what's his face, right?
Of Kevin Kline. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Good on you for knowing that tidbit. Yeah, Greta Kline has a band called Frankie Cosmos, which is just a record that Josh and Kurt and I all really thought was awesome. It was a record called Zentropy. And then just in kind of nerding out and learning more about the band, learned about Eskimo and saw that they were kind of like right in the same spot we were as a label. Just, you know, a lot of potential waiting to be harnessed a little bit more. So we reached out to them and we went to see them at Mac Rock in Harrisonburg, which is a festival that happens every year, and talked to them and thought they were cool. And so that's how Eskimo happened. And Japanese Breakfast is a little bit different, more like we were going to Philadelphia to play all the time, met a lot of kids in those scenes, and just kind of made different circles of friends amongst Kurt, myself, and Josh. And Josh ended up hanging out with some people in a band called Mercury Girls, and then through that connection talked to a band called Little Big League, which is also the band that Japanese Breakfast was a part of. Mm-hmm. So if that's a lot of band names and strings for you, but that's how that happened. You know, just kind of knowing friends of friends for those. But we don't usually like go hunting for bands too much, and we don't, you know, we listen to everything that somebody sends us, but honestly that hasn't really been much. It's kind of every artist we've signed has had a little bit more than like that type of thing going on. It's either like a friend of a friend or an artist that's coming highly recommended from another artist or entity, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, how did you and Josh, I mean what is your technical role right now in Yellow K Records? Is it helping with artists? Is it...
Well, so each of us are sort of like independent project managers at any given time. So I don't know if you've had to help a band put out a record before personally, but there's just a lot of little busy work that you, just like anything in life, you wouldn't guess is going to be there. Lots of little things to keep up on, keep organized. When it comes to running a label that gets to a certain size, you know, there is a lot of, like our label's at the place where there's a lot of communication to do. So for instance, my role any given day is just, I have this project, it's releases 3 months from now. I am the person who is keeping the band, the PR people, the label, the manufacturing, and any other touring or like booking help that they have all kind of looped together in the same conversation, trying to keep just the potential of all the opportunities working together, not against each other. So it's just a lot of like grabbing a project, being the oversight person for it and seeing it through until the release date, and then sort of following up on it after that. And that's like the labor part of it. But another part of it is just really getting down into the record with the band and trying to see it from all angles and give them good advice and be a cheerleader and get them excited. And if they need help with anything related to it, try to be that help if we can, you know? So that's like the daily work of running a label. And then the bigger stuff is just what you'd call, I guess, development. You know, there's always room to grow from where we are. We're still a tiny, tiny label with partners that are equally kind of small. And as you go, you're always kind of looking to step up those partnerships or increase your ability for your artists and for everything you're doing. So amongst the daily busy work, you try to find a half an hour or an hour every day to think about and communicate to new people and develop the label further and reach out and make good on your successes, that type of stuff.
Is it hard balancing the two halves where, you know, on one half you're the musician yourself, the Mr. Husband, and then the other you're the one managing a Mr. Husband musician type? Because I mean, in this case, were you managing your own Mr. Husband release, or did someone else help with that?
Yeah, totally. Well, and I'm asking for clarity. I guess I'm asking for objectivity from my partners at that point, you know, about certain decisions. But at the end of the day, I'm definitely the guy who's like running that project, and it's not difficult. It's just kind of, it's hard to stay objective when it's your own music, you know? And so that's why I end up leaning on them a little bit and asking like, you know, is this the right song for a single, or am I right to like push this aspect of it? Or sometimes too, when you're communicating with people in the industry and they're like employed by you, like PR people, if you get irritated, it's good to ask someone outside of yourself, like, am I right to be irritated by this? You know, or something like that. But for the most part, it's just a solitary thing, emails and phone calls and keeping up on that type of stuff.
Moving forward, do you think that one sphere will grow big enough where it is the major part of your life and your career? I mean, do you think that you're going to keep balancing the management and the artistic sides of music, or do you think that one's going to win out eventually?
I don't know. That's one for the fates, I suppose. I would hope that both would be able to be balanced as long as I'm alive. And really, me and my partners definitely have realized just from a couple years of doing it that there's a thin line between like having fun and taking on way too much. And so I think we kind of have our eye on that ball a little bit, and I'm hoping that like we keep working on that balance so that I can have my cake and eat it too, because it's fun to be a part of both, for sure.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed, you know, although I've never made music myself, I've enjoyed both halves, where it's, you know, trying to figure out the best way to market and create this, you know, communication strategy around an object, and then also trying to be the creative aspect of it to push it through. It's fun that way.
Yeah. If there's one, like, thing I'm really grateful for about running the label is it informs the way that I see that type of stuff, you know, marketing and how to project something so much, because I do it on repetition now and I do it objectively for other people and I try to remain really objective. So when it came to my own project, Mr. Husband, you know, I don't know if you've seen like kind of the kind of weird stuff we've put out online to promote the project around the music, and like our stage show is theatrical. I wear a costume and I like say a lot of kind of like self-help type stuff on stage. Like, I'm really trying to make the crowd believe that I love them and that I'm there for them and that we're all having this like really positive experience, even though nothing has actually made that happen yet. And I don't know. I think if I hadn't done the label, I wouldn't see the need to be that entertaining or to like to frame it quite so distinctly. But now that I've done a few other people's projects, I'm like, oh yeah, you really got to put a bold frame around something in 2017 for it to make sense for people and for them to latch onto it, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. It's sadly, it's more about, it's not more, but it's almost equal parts spectacle as it is talent, and just the luck to be able to push both of them through and hope that one of them attracts attention.
Totally, man. And I would say shout out to my boys in Roswell Kid for like being a shining light in the West Virginia music scene, because their tunes are great and also because they're like the most entertaining band that I've ever seen. You know, they're just so crazy and together on stage, and I felt inspired seeing them go that direction, being bold, and for sure, you know. So
besides this new release that you're promoting, what are you looking towards? What's on your game plan for the next year?
Well, we just started the Mr. Husband Band and did our first little mini tour of East Coast cities and kind of learned about how the music and the theatrics affect people in certain types of venues and situations. So me and the boys are like hunkering down, going to make a little longer set, going to book some venues that are a little more appropriate for us in the fall. And I think I'm just going to stay focused on taking the work that we've done for Mr. Husband already and really just trying to show it to as many people as I can in the next 6 months probably or year. And then we also have a lot of new songs. I want to record another record. And
is that for Mr. Husband, yeah, or New God?
Yeah. Mr. Husband already has like probably a whole nother record locked and loaded.
Wow.
That we've been playing some of the songs live. So want to get it out real fast and kind of be, you know, on top of whatever audience we've built already. And outside of that, I just want to, you know, spend as much time with my family and my friends as I can. You know, that's kind of the real goal in my life, is to finish these projects, be satisfied with them, and find myself with a drink in my hand beside my wife at some point, you know.
Oh, now if you're Mr. Husband, then is she Mrs. Wife? Is that?
She's Mrs. Husband or Cookie Pie. Yeah. There's a song on the record, track 3, called Cookie Pie. That is my little nickname for her, and that song is like technically about her for sure.
Oh, does she like it? Is that her favorite song off the release?
Yeah, she likes it. She's like, she knows that I'm a goofball, and like, you know, she takes it all with a grain of salt, I think.
So based off your experience making music, but also your experience managing it and being this artistic director and promoter, marketer, what kind of advice could you give to an emerging, say, West Virginia artist who's wanting to come out on top or to make and promote their music? I mean, I'm sure you have all kinds of tips and tricks, but if you had to narrow it down to one thing, what would you say is that one thing that they should do?
Yeah. Well, if we're going to put a tip or a trick out there, I would say ask other people what they think and, you know, accept it when they give you feedback that's not praise. I think that's really hard for artists in small scenes that don't have a lot of support to hear their friends or their family say this or that about their music. But I really lean on my friends and family and try to get a sort of consensus about what I'm doing and and don't just run with that initial passion that I have for my art, because it's really easy to just love your own stuff and think it's all fantastic. But other than that, I wouldn't really say anything is a trick or a way out of West Virginia or into other scenes. I would say if there's one lesson I've learned and that a lot of musicians I know would agree with is you really need to settle in and be patient if you want to have any success as an artist, first and foremost, but then like promoting your art as well. Both of those things, there's really no way to skip to the head of the line. The internet would make you think so, but that's just not true. You know, and take satisfaction in a 2017 kind of way is like maybe my last tip. You know, a lot of people have old ideas about what they have to do just because they wrote a song or made a record with it. But if it satisfies you to just put it up on YouTube and like try to find a community for it that way, good. Like, don't let it wreck your life. Don't drop out of college because there's probably not a really well-paying position for you in the music industry, to be honest. You know? That's real. That's honest. So
that's all great advice. So this is great conversation. Is there a question or something that we just didn't get around to that you really wanted to bring up about your music or West Virginia?
Oh, no, but thank you so much for caring about my music and for listening to what I have to say. And, you know, I hope that just being an artist from West Virginia, if anybody's listening and likes what I'm doing, you know, I would want you to think I can do that too, because I think it's probably true. Like, there's probably something inside you that's worth expressing. If it's not like mine, that's cool, you know. But I didn't really feel like there was a lot of that message around me when I was a young West Virginian, so I'm saying it, and I hope somebody hears it, you know.
Mr. Husband's debut release is Plaid on Plaid, out now on Yellow K Records. 30 Days of West Virginia Music is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting and A Change of Tune. This episode was written, edited, and produced by me, Joni Deutsch. Our associate producer is Nathan Thomas. Our digital promotions come from Josh Saul. Our theme was composed by Matt Jackford and performed by Montana Skies and John Query. You can hear more West Virginia music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Follow us on social media. We're at A Change of Tune. And for more West Virginia music chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/wvmusic and subscribe to our podcast feed. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.